Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with three friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor. Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app.
Thanks to Republic Records.
This is a national contest.
There's only a few guys who kind of, when you mention Dodgers, that I still like. Dave Roberts is one of them. And one of the others is joining us right now, Jerry Hairston Jr. I love talking Dodger baseball with Jerry, and very kind of him to come on ahead of this two-game series. Jerry, I'm to the Padres, this is a big deal. To the Dodgers, I assume it's just another series, although the Padres are the team, along with Arizona, closest to them in the standings. So I'm sure that the Padres have at least, if nothing else, this year got the Dodgers' attention.
Oh, absolutely. You know, the Dodgers definitely have taken notice of what's going down in San Diego, especially after the last game, that walk-off win, where young Renfro was able to take Kenley Jansen deep for a walk-off win. So it's never an easy series because of proximity of San Diego and L.A., and you understand that they continue to improve, and you know they got a good young and up and coming team, and they're hungry.
Jerry, clearly, you know you're not the only one feeling like this. ESPN has picked up that Tuesday night game between the Dodgers and the Padres. Clayton Kershaw versus Chris Paddock for the Padres should be a good matchup. What have you seen from Clayton Kershaw this year? Because there was a lot of people writing him off, and yet. No surprise to myself, he comes back and has been terrific early on in this season.
Well, you know, I know, Tony, you're a huge Kobe Bryant fan. You know, as Kobe Bryant got a little older, he lost a little bit of his fastball, so he started to add more of a post game to his game. So Clayton Kershaw has kind of done the same thing. You know, he doesn't throw that 95 to 97 on our fastball anymore. So what he has done is, he's added a cutter. Now, he gets mad at me every time I call it a cutter. He says it's a slider. But make no mistake about it, it's a cutter. Kind of like Andy Pettit used to have years ago, Al Leiter as well. So it's been an effective pitch. He rarely throws a four-seam fastball. When he does, it's usually a way to the right-handed batter. But he's added that cutter / slider, and it's been a really good effective pitch. And, you know, he doesn't have the velocity that he had, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 years ago. But he still gets out.
Jerry, the Dodgers missed Chris Paddock the first time around, but I'm very sure they're well aware of what he's been doing. His numbers are off the charts. It's a big challenge for him, obviously, to face this great Dodger team. But what are the guys saying, or have you heard anything about them getting an opportunity to go up against this young phenom?
Well, I think you just call them the right word for him, a phenom. You know, he's a guy that, I'm excited to watch. You know, I know he runs the fastball up there pretty good, and I hear he's got a couple of array of off-speed pitches. And if I'm not mistaken, I hear he's got as good a changeup as anybody.
Yeah.
So I haven't seen him up close, but I can't wait to see him throw. And I know he's probably going to try to rise to the challenge of having Clayton Kershaw on the other side. I know a lot of pitchers say, well, hey, I don't really care who's on the other side. Come on, man. Everybody knows who's on the other side.
Yeah.
Who you're facing. And usually young guys, especially with stuff, like to kind of compare themselves to, you know, to the guys that have been doing it for quite a long time. So I'm excited to see him throw.
Jerry Hairston Jr., Spectrum Sports Net LA, joins us on the SDCCU Fan Hotline. Jerry, Cody Bellinger has seemingly taken that next step, at least early on. Dave Roberts issued that challenge early in the season about guys, if you want everyday playing time, you're going to have to do it against both lefties and righties. Cody Bellinger has done that. He came here in San Diego and had a little bit of an injury where his shoulder popped out of place and popped right back in. How has he fared since he's come back? I see he's still swinging it well. Is there any concerns that the shoulder may be an issue long term?
I don't think it's going to be an issue long term. He says he's fine. He's still swinging the bat extremely well. He had a multi-hit game yesterday, playing great defense in right field and at first base. You know, it's amazing. You know, it's great to see young players develop and really reach their potential. And
yeah.
You know, I always thought Cody Bellinger could be a 280 to 290 hitter, obviously run into 40 to possibly 50 home runs on a good year. But he has really taken to, you know, the Ken Griffey Jr. motto when we were kids. Tony, your father was probably the best to ever do it as far as making contact with two strikes. He wants to be, you know, the Ken Griffey Jr. when he's ahead of the count, 2-1, 2-0, and he's looking to drive a baseball. When he gets the two strikes, you guys should look up his average. When he's hitting with two strikes, it's above 350. That's wow. Insane. What he's doing now is he tells himself, all I want to do is touch the baseball with two strikes. I'm not looking to drive it. I just want to make contact. I'll look to go the other way and get my hits. And now he has expedited the process, that learning curve. And in my opinion, outside of Mike Trout, is the best player in all of baseball. He does everything. He runs. He has a cannon in right field. He's got great range at first base in the outfield. He hits for power, hits for average. So he's kind of the mix of Ken Griffey Jr., you know, when he's ahead of count, and Tony Gwynn Sr. when he's got two strikes.
And he's mean, too, because he threw out Steven Strasburg trying to get a single from right field. That was cold-blooded, man.
Cold-blooded!
Yeah, it was. Hey, Jerry Hairston Jr. is with us. I'm going to ask about the bullpen a little bit, Jerry, because look, that's been the one bugaboo, if there's been a bugaboo for the Dodgers the last couple of years. How do they feel about this year's version of the bullpen? Jansen is getting it done. Baez has seemed to bounce back nicely. Floro, I think, gave up a grand slam the other night, if I'm not mistaken, but I don't think he's given up an earned run. So, I mean, he's been pitching all right. Sounds like they've got a few arms there. Are they happy with what they have?
I think they're happy with what they have. There's always room for improvement. They're still searching and trying to find who the eighth inning guy will be. I was hoping it'd be Joe Kelly. They signed him to a 3-year deal. He's been off to a slow start, but he's been pitching a lot better of late. Floral has done a nice job. Baez has really done a great job of coming in, throwing strikes, getting outs. The one wild card that I've really been impressed with has been Julio Urias.
Mm, yeah.
He's a young guy who started this season as a starter. Now they want to limit his innings, so they have put him in the bullpen, and I think they're starting to find something with him. You know, maybe down the stretch, do they use him as a hater type of lefty? You know, coming in and getting – You know, some tough hitters out, maybe extending him to 2+ innings if need be. But, you know, coming out of the bullpen, he's going 97, 98 miles an hour. So, you know, he's a guy that could be a weapon down the stretch.
Long term, Jerry, is that how they see him, you know, being used out of the bullpen? Or are they going to use him out of the bullpen as necessary like they have been thus far?
They're going to use him out of the bullpen this season because they want to keep his innings down. But no, Tony, make no mistake about it, man. He's a starter.
Okay.
This kid has 3+ pitches. I love his slider now. I think he's learned it from Clayton Kershaw. Excellent breaking ball, great changeup as well. The changeup kind of has a little bit like a screwball type action. Not Fernando Valenzuela-esque, but getting there. And he's got a great fastball. So he's going to be a starter down the road. But right now, to kind of limit his innings, they're putting him in the bullpen.
That's just too bad. The Dodgers, again, just coming up short when it comes to depth and pitching and all of these unbelievable things. This is a great team. Jerry Hairston Jr. is with us on the SDCCU Fan Hotline. Last thing for me, Jerry, how do you think Manny Machado is going to be received Tuesday night at Dodger Stadium? He got a pretty good chorus of boos from the L.A. fans who came down here to San Diego a couple weeks ago.
He's going to be greeted with a ray of booze. I think it's going to be 90% booze, and the 10% that won't be is probably Padre fans. But you know what? As a player, if you're Manny Machado, I welcome it. You know, because that means you're a marked man. You've made an impression. You're an elite player. So you understand that it just comes with the territory. I think it was Reggie Jackson who said, they don't boo nobody. You know,
right.
So true especially story. When you're the visiting player. Now, I got booed when I was the home player. I don't think that's as good. but when you're the visiting player, I think you welcome it.
Jerry, great talking with you as always. We always look forward to Dodger-Padres series, but even more so now that we always get a chance to talk with you. Enjoy the games this week and continue enjoying the season. Appreciate your time.
Thanks,
Jerry. Look forward to catching up with you soon.
Anytime, guys.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
4:33 on the clock. Tony Gwynn Jr., Chris Ella, talking a little NBA basketball. And joining us now, former San Diego State men's basketball coach Steve Fisher is on the line. Coach Fisher, thank you for your time and coming on the show today.
My pleasure, Tony. Happy to be on with you and Chris.
So I assume that you got a chance to watch Kawhi and his heroics yesterday. What can you say about how good he has been in this playoff stretch?
Yes, we all watched. We were having Mother's Day at our house, and we had Mark and his wife Jill, the little guy Max, and Angie and I, and we delayed sitting down at the dinner table to watch the end of that game. It was absolutely sensational, the finale and what Kawhi did to win that game. It was terrific.
Coach, I've had some people tell me that when he was off last year and was hurt in the Spurs and the whole thing was going on, that he was doing a lot of practicing at Viejas Arena and just working on, just constantly working on his game. I don't think this comes as a surprise to anybody who follows Kawhi Leonard. But he said yesterday that he's practiced that exact move like hundreds of times, where he dribbles from the top of the key over to the right baseline and shoots a running jump shot like that. Does it surprise you or not surprise you to hear him say that he's practiced that shot a bunch of times before? Because I think people probably say it was a lucky shot. I don't think it was. I think it's all preparation when it comes to Kawhi Leonard.
Well, I've watched Kawhi go through a precise workout, and I've made the statement before, you watch him in the middle of summer working on his game, and he looks like he's preparing for Game 7 of the NBA Finals. So that statement from Kawhi, it's very believable for those of us that have seen how he works out with the diligence, the precision, the craftsmanship, all with the desire of getting better and doing things with a purpose that he knows that he will have an opportunity to do when game time comes.
Former men's San Diego State basketball coach Steve Fisher joins us here on the SDCCU Fan Hotline. Coach Fisher, what's the one thing you have seen in Kawhi's NBA game that has improved most since he left the Aztec? And this is aside from shooting, because that's the obvious one, is the shooting. But is there anything else that you've seen in his game in the NBA that has drastically improved since he left you at San Diego State?
No, Tony, you stole my line. The one thing that he has taken to a level that's really, really significant now is his perimeter shot. Mm. And people, when he came out of high school, people said, hey, well, he's a tweener. He's not quite skilled enough to be a perimeter player, not big enough to be a inside player. And we said, this guy's a player. He can play anywhere. And statistically, he was not a great three-point shooter. But he worked. And I think they're standing in line now to take credit for helping Kawhi.
I'm sure they are.
Kawhi is the one that needs to step up and say, I'm the reason I'm a better shooter. Others may offer advice, but Kawhi is a better shooter because of Kawhi. That's the thing that he's improved on the most. What is asked of him now this year with Toronto is to do more. They want him to shoot the ball. What did he take, 39 shots? He took too many shots yesterday.
Yeah.
So others need to step up and say, Kawhi, show us the way, but we need to be a part of what we're doing if they want to ultimately win an NBA championship. He needs to be the leader, but everybody needs to perform like they did in maybe game five when they had so many people in double figures. But he's a remarkable young man who has taken great pride in saying, there's more I can do. Yeah. I can get better. And you get to the NBA and some say, I've made it. and they never get better. He is intent on, probably without saying it, he wants to be the best that's ever played.
Yeah, I think he does. And I think that he gets he doesn't even get into the conversation when they talk about the best players in the league until somebody brings him up, and then somebody will say, oh, yeah, he's got to be in the conversation for one of the best players in the league. Coach D. Fisher is with us. Coach, you know him as well as anybody. There's certainly a lot of questions out there as to what he may or may not do in the offseason. I know you certainly can't predict, and I'm sure he hasn't confided in you, but both Tony and I think Toronto's probably a pretty good place for him because he just loves to play. He doesn't need a lot of the media attention and doesn't care about all that scrutiny and, you know, all the popularity. He just likes to play basketball. To me, he would be pretty sharp to just stay right there in Toronto and just keep on playing the way he is. What do you think?
Well, you're right. I've not talked to him at all about that, and I would hesitate to speculate in terms of what he might do or what would be best for him to do. I think only Kawhi can make that decision, and there'll be a lot of factors that enter into it. You know, he now has a second child, Kawhi Jr., that I think is about 3 months old now. And so he'll have a lot to deal with when the season ends, and hopefully that won't be for quite a while before he will make a decision. I will say that winning yesterday certainly has to keep Toronto in the picture of a spot where he might wind up being next year. But we'll just have to wait and see. I'll be like everybody else. I'll be anxious to see what he chooses to do. Obviously, he will be paid a lot of money to play for somebody.
Coach Steve Fisher joins us here on the SDCCU Fan Hotline, former men's San Diego State basketball coach. Coach Fisher, you talked a little bit about Kawhi's leadership. Has he always been the leader that we see now, or is this something he's really grown into?
You know what grated on me and grinded me a little bit is when I heard out of the San Antonio camp, people say, well, Kawhi's not a leader.
Yeah.
And that could not be further from the truth. Kawhi has never been a boisterous, vocal, yell it out to the world leader. Kawhi leads by example. He's someone that desperately wants to win when game time starts. He's someone that will give to get. I don't think that scoring 35 points a game is something that he feels like should define him. Winning is what has always defined Kawhi Leonard. He did it in high school. He did it for the Aztecs. He did it when he was in San Antonio, and he's doing it with Toronto. That's the leadership that is beyond reproach and is as good as there is in the league.
Well, for all of the things that you did and continue to still do for San Diego State University, bringing Kawhi Leonard to the Aztecs was one of your best moves ever, Coach. And it's just fun for us, all of us former Aztecs and Aztecs for life, to just keep watching him perform and do what he does. And yesterday was one of the great highlights. Thanks for coming on and just sharing a few moments with us, and enjoy the rest of the playoffs. Great always talking to you, and it was fun seeing you the other night, too. Always good to bump into you.
It was nice to see you guys at the wedding. So it was really, really neat. And isn't it great to have the nation talk about Kawhi Leonard from San Diego State when they mention all the great things that he's doing right now?
Yeah, that's
brings a smile to my face every time I hear it.
Every time.
Me too.
Thanks, Coach.
Thank you, man.
Thanks,
right.
Coach.
There he is, the great Coach Steve Fisher right there.
SDCCU has low mortgage loan rates. Equal housing opportunities. Apply now at SDCCU.com.
Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with three friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor. Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app.
Thanks to Republic Records.
This is a national contest.
We do have Ramona.
So cool of her to join us because she's been so busy today.
I can imagine. A lot of Laker news going on. Yeah. Joining us on the SDCCU Fan Hotline, Ramona Shelburne, ESPN. Ramona, thank you for coming on. Thank you for sharing your time today.
You're welcome.
First of all, happy.
As my call waiting is beeping in, but it's one of those. It's that kind of time in the NBA.
First of all, happy belated Mother's Day.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. So let's get right to it. The Lakers finally settle on a head coach. They bring in Frank Vogel after two attempts that didn't really work out to their satisfaction, and they bring on Jason Kidd as an assistant. Where do we go from here?
I mean, the only thing that will make this work is if they actually win. Because,
yeah.
you chose your words carefully there, right?
And yes.
Very well. The Lakers finally settled on Frank Vogel. I mean, that is what it feels like, right?
Yep.
It just sort of feels like the one guy who would take the job under the conditions they're offering. Short-term contract, lots of pressure. We're going to pick your staff for you. You basically have no power and no leverage. Sounds awesome.
Sounds like the right kind of head coaching job.
Well, I would have taken it.
Yeah, so
but
I guess
Vogel.
There's a bet on yourself, right? Yeah. I mean, there's a bet on yourself quality to this, but mostly I just think it's kind of if that's what this was really about, cool. But just say so. But if not, it just kind of seems like you ended up there because you mismanaged some other stuff.
Is it fair to just say that the Lakers are just dysfunctional now, Ramona? I mean, is that too harsh, or is it pretty close to accurate? Where is this organization, honestly?
Without them coming out and saying this is what we think or what we're doing, and whether or not they say that publicly or behind the scenes, I think you can only infer that it's a little dysfunctional, right?
Yeah.
But if there is, I'm sure they have a thought process. I'm sure they have reasoning. I get wind of it. I get spun, that kind of stuff. And maybe they just know that what they're doing is very unpopular and there's really no way to spin it. And so they're just going to, let everybody pile on and hope that they get successes in free agency or successes in the draft and start winning more. Because, I mean, I know, people I've definitely heard from more than one person with the Lakers now, we just need to win, right? The only thing that will make this better is winning. And so I think that's kind of where they are. And maybe it's just better to just do what you really believe in and what you think is right. And trust that things will get better next year. We'll see. Right. I mean, you're betting on winning. Well, you better win then.
Ramona, some of your colleagues have focused on the storyline of the Rambises. How real is the influence that, the Rambises have in this organization? I know they're close to the owner, Jeannie Buss. Obviously, Kurt was a close confidant to Phil Jackson. Do they have as much power as people are writing about at this point?
Yeah, but I think the thing that people are wrong about is this is not new. They've always had power.
Okay.
I mean, Linda Rambis has worked for the Lakers for 40 years, and she's been Jeannie's best friend since Jeannie was at USC and in college, right? And she has been in the office fielding calls from agents and players, and handling. I would always describe her as the chief of staff almost, right? And a lot of owners have people like this in that type of role. They're consiglieres, chief of staff, whatever you want to call it, who wield a tremendous amount of influence on ownership. So I don't think it's new. I just think you just know about it now because there's no forward-facing public face of the franchise.
Ramona Shelburne, ESPN, is with us. Very nice enough to share some of her time. She's very busy, and we do want to let you go shortly. Real quick, what do you think the odds are that the Lakers are going to add the big name type player that obviously would make LeBron happy and make Tony happy and make Laker fans happy? Is that out the window now, or is there still a shot for that?
No, there's always a shot. I just think none of us know how free agency is going to go just yet, because so much of it seems to be, that Kevin Durant's the big domino that has to fall first. And, once that domino falls, then the rest of them can start following. But, even though people think they know what's going to happen, Kevin's not the kind of guy you can place bets on, right? He's emotional. He changes his mind sometimes. I would have thought he was going to Oakland. Then I thought he was going to stay. Then I thought he was going to Oakland. I mean, it's just, last free agency. So I think a lot of, you just really never know until free agency takes place how one affects the other. But they don't seem to be in very good position on the top two or three guys. It seems like they have a lot of money that they can spend there, or they can use their salary cap space in a trade. That's a little people forget about that. It's not just always about who you get in free agency, but what you use that money for.
Yeah. Ramona, where does LeBron sit with all of this chaos going on? Or, you know, I don't even want to call it what seems to be chaos. Where does he stand, and how does he feel about everything going on? Because now I'm seeing reports of a possible Simmons for LeBron trade. It seems a little crazy to me, but as you said, we can never predict what's going to happen.
Well, I think LeBron, the official party line and the official stance of Planet LeBron is, I'm staying out of it.
Right.
Okay. And, you know, to the extent that he can stay out of it, right? I mean, his opinion is solicited. They run things by him to make sure he's not going to be really upset. But if his general stance is, I'm staying out of it, you know, that's not saying I agree or disagree. That says I'm not going to tell you what I think. So he sort of reserves the right to tell you what he thinks later. Right now, I think he took a lot of criticism after his first year, and he's in the same boat of, like, he just has to play better and do better, and they need to win. So he is staying out of it. He has a choice to make of how involved he's going to be in Lakers free agency. Some of that's a risk, right? If you put yourself out there and say, I'm going to recruit, and then you don't get anybody,
yeah,
kind of on you. So I think that's what he's feeling and thinking. And, you know, he has to weigh how involved he wants it, because, you know, this is his career. This is the last, you know, couple good years of his career. Like, how do you want them to go? Do you want to have a say in the matter? Or do you want to worry about whether you're going to get blamed?
Great stuff. Ramona Shelburne, ESPN, just a fantastic NBA reporter. Ramona, if I gave you the Warriors or I gave you the other three teams remaining and you had to, you know, a $5 bet, mm-hmm, who would you go, Warriors or the other three?
Oh, I'm on the Warriors.
Warriors. Okay.
I wouldn't have a trouble betting more than that $5.
All right.
Look, I know they're down Kevin Durant. That's a tricky injury. You know, Tony, that's a pulled calf isn't something you could rush back from, but I don't even know that he needs to play in this series against Portland for them to win. I think they can win without him. They probably need him against either the Bucks or the Raptors because of Kawhi and Giannis, right? Like, I don't think they have anyone who could really match either of those guys, but I mean, they're so much better than everybody else in the league. They have been for a while. And the one thing you always worry about is whether they get hurt or whether they beat themselves. I don't know. I don't know if I'd worry about them beating themselves right now when they get this close.
Yeah.
You know, I worry maybe a little bit against Portland. That's a letdown kind of series after the Rockets. But, you know, they just should win because they're better. that's really the high level analysis, right? They should win.
That's the perfect analysis.
The truth.
Yeah.
Ramona, one more before we let you get out of here. We all saw former Aztec Kawhi Leonard hit the game winner to knock out Philly. Do you think the longer they stay in this, the better his better Toronto's chances are of keeping him in Toronto?
I'll go with that. I still think he's going to LA, but I think they have better. Yeah, I think they have a better chance of keeping him, right? If you know, especially if they win, or go to the finals. But you know, look, you have to remember Kawhi went to the finals before. It's not like he's been there.
That's true.
And he's the finals MVP. He's won the finals, so this isn't like a thing he has to check off the list. If he has another team that he feels like he could lead to the finals in free agency, and that team happens to be in Los Angeles near his family. I don't know. I mean, this wasn't some new territory for him, right? It would be hard to walk away from an NBA champion.
Yeah.
So I guess if they win, it would be hard. But I still think Toronto went into this with his eyes open, knowing this was like kind of a, hey, we need to get the best player on the court, and they had him in that series, right? Kawhi was the best player on the court in that series. I think they'll have him. I don't know. We'll see him and Giannis, right? That'll be interesting in this next round. But they had to do something. Otherwise, it was time to tear that team down.
Good point. Ramona, as always, we so appreciate your time.
So nice of you to come on.
We know how busy you are this time of year.
Thank you for hopefully you used us as a little lunch break today from all your work.
Cool. It's a little break in between calls and call waiting.
Thanks so much.
We appreciate your time, Rona. Thank you.
Look forward to talking to you again.
Okay, bye.
Very cool.
That
Ramona
was
Shelburne,
Shelburne, senior writer, ESPN on the SDCCU fan hotline. Remember, SDCCU has low mortgage rate, low mortgage loan rates, equal housing opportunity. Apply now at SDCCU.com.
Gwen and Chris wanted to rank things, and that means whatever they want.
Come on, don't get weird.
They bring you their top five of the day because it's time to start the countdown.
All right, this can be like whatever you mean. You think, like your five favorite guys, and I think you're going to have some great insight here because you know a lot of these guys personally so much better than the rest of us. Your five favorite guys, your five favorite players, your five best players. So however you want to do it. You want to go or you want me to go first? You call it.
You go first.
Number five, Franmil Reyes.
Number five.
Wait, these are current favorite Padres? This
no,
could be any of them.
Anybody.
Okay.
Sorry, but I jumped the gun again because I always do.
it's in your
blood. It's in my blood. Franmil Reyes is my fifth favorite Padre of all time. That's how much I like him already. He's just, I get the biggest kick out of this guy every time he comes up to the plate. I agree with you, Tony, and what everybody else is saying. He wants to learn so badly. When he makes an out, you see him in the dugout talking to his coaches. What can I do better? Then his next at bat, he does things to correct it.
He does. He does that consistently.
And then the day that we had him read his little spot that said, I'm Franmil Reyes and you're listening to Padre Baseball, and he went over to the side and practiced it. Practiced. But no, he, because English is not his first language, he wanted to make sure it sounded very good and professional. He worked at it. I am such a huge Franmil Reyes fan, so he's already on my list as my fifth favorite Padre of all time.
All right, number five.
Wow, can we stop there real quick?
Go ahead,
that is insane. I agree with you. I love Franmil, but that for you being a baseball historian that you are, that shows you how much he gets to you.
Unfortunately, a lot of the Padres played before I was in the media, so I didn't really get to know a lot of these guys. Franmil, I've met.
I'll never forget the day that we're at spring training and Franmil walks by and he looks over and Chris just goes, Franmil! And Franmil just lifts up his arm, smiles, and walks to the batting cage.
He's always smiling.
I don't think I've ever seen him not smile, honestly.
No,
as soon as you call his name, a big grin comes on his face.
Yep.
All right, number five for me. You guys might, you'll remember him, Chris, for sure. The late Mike Darr.
Okay.
One of my favorites.
I remember him, but never got to meet him.
As a young kid, man, he was so good to me and so...
Huh.
Nice.
That's great to hear.
He was just a good dude, man.
To tragic end to his life.
And I remember my mom calling me to let me know. I was at San Diego State at the time and let me know that he had passed in a car accident. It shook me up a little bit, but he was one of my favorite. He starts at five for me.
Left-handed outfielder,
yeah.
Or left-handed hitting outfielder and pinch hitter and a really good little player and just a tragic end. Mike Darn.
Number four.
Interesting. Okay. My number four is another guy that I don't know well, but just is always very nice and also qualifies as one of the better players, I think, in Padre history. Underrated. That's Mark Loretta. Mark Loretta jumps into number four for me. Can't think of a classier guy. Number two hitter in Padre history behind only Tony Gwynn Sr. Twice Padres MVP. And if you ever get a chance to meet Mark Loretta, you'd probably put him in your top five, too.
Number four for me, Damian Jackson.
Ah, Damian Jackson.
DJ.
I remember him.
I still talk to DJ to this day. So he was one of the guys that, as I was progressing through college and like always was willing to help. Him, Jock Jones, these two dudes were always working out together and were always willing to hand out some information, some jewels, as we like to call it. And he was really helpful in my career, giving me the information that I needed to keep moving forward. Damian Jackson,
awesome.
Number four.
And Damian Jackson was a guy that always did more than you thought he was going to do.
Yep.
Like, always. And he played all those positions before they had guys.
Before there was a real utility, right? Before they called it a super utility?
Yeah, he was that.
He was doing that.
Number three.
Before I get to number three, I want to mention that I did not include Tony Gwynn Jr. on my list. And you were a Padre, but I just feel like you're already kind of included.
So
he would have been number one on my list.
I just wanted to let you kind of know that. Number three for me is, And he was in studio, and I got a huge thrill, not as big as the my Garv. Mom, but the Garv. The Garv has to be. Part of the reason that the Garv is one of my favorite Padres is because I grew up in Los Angeles watching him in L.A., and I do feel like he was legendary as a player. I think he got overlooked badly for the Hall of Fame. And if you ever want to argue with me about that, I'll be happy to argue back with you because I think he deserves a look. But and then finally getting a chance to really sit down and spend some time with him, he was everything I thought he'd be. Just a kind, gracious man. Yep. But what a great clutch ball player he was, too. And Padre fans, of course, know that as well. So Garv comes in at three.
Number three for me, we actually were blessed to have him on during the Hall of Fame, is Ricky Henderson. From the moment he stepped into a Padre locker room in 1996, he has been one of my favorite Padres. Like, this guy, I remember sitting next to him in Atlanta. It was like a rain delay, and I'm just sitting in the corner. I'm just picking his brain on what he's looking at when he's stealing lefties, righties. And he sat there and once again just was willing to give me that information and answer any question I had. And he was funny. It was fun to be around him because a lot of the Padre players, because Ricky was old school, some of the young guys would always pick on him a little bit about his attire, what he was wearing. But Ricky didn't care about that at all. You couldn't tell Ricky nothing.
I think by the time, that was probably our biggest thrill interview in the Hall of Fame, other than Trevor, of course. But when Ricky came down, and Scraby, tell that story again of how he came down, because I think it's one of the funnier ones.
Yeah, I went up there, saw him. He was talking to someone, and they immediately, when they got done talking to him, I immediately went over to him. There was two women on the couch, and I was talking to Ricky, hey, do you got some time to come down and talk with us and everything? He looks at his wife, and his wife looks at the other woman on the couch, and the other woman looks at Ricky and says, oh, you're going to go do an interview with my son. It was Tony's mom on the couch, so Tony's mom really gets the assist.
Tony's mom made him come down and do the interview, and he goes, jumped to it, too.
He goes, oh, yes, I would love to do the interview.
He was going to say no until your mom jumped in, and I don't blame him. Smart move.
It's one of the best stories I have in sports radio.
That was funny. All right, number two is going to come as a complete, total surprise to you, I think. The reason that this guy is so high on my list, A, incredibly underrated in terms of his defensive brilliance. He was Manny Machado before we got Manny Machado, because this guy used to turn in plays that would knock your socks off on a nightly basis.
Cool.
But the reason that I put him up at number two is because I did a huge story on him for a magazine and just got to spend a lot of time with him, got to really know him, and he is a very, you know, the surface just didn't cut it. You had to really dig a little deeper to get to know this guy. But once you did, I thought he was a tremendous young man whose career really was cut short basically because of his own insecurities. But that is now leading me to tell you that it's Khalil Green. I can't tell you what a great kid I thought he was. And, right? He made some great plays, didn't he?
He made some unbelievable plays.
Unbelievable at shortstop stuff. And just because I got to do that in-depth story and talk to a lot of people about him for this story and just really liked what I learned. So, Khalil, you're my number two.
My number two, Andy Ashby.
Andy Ashby, all right.
This all goes back to my childhood. So
right,
Andy was a terrific human being. He was a good pitcher for the Padres in his time here.
Yes, he was.
He was the guy who was the number two starter right behind Kevin Brown that year they went to the World Series. And my best memory of Andy Ashby, my mom, my dad, and myself got up in Cincinnati one morning, went fishing, and we must have caught 85 fish. And it was literally every single time you casted the swarm hit the water, bam, you get hit. And he was just so cool and exciting to hang out with. Andy Ashby's my number two.
Andy Ashby.
Number one.
Did I tell you my Andy Ashby story?
No, you have not told me my
Andy. I think I might have. Why are you waving?
We can't fit all these things in.
Why? What do we have coming up?
We have an interview.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
Well, I will remember that for you to tell that at 6 o'clock.
I will. I'll tell the Andy Ashley story at 6 o'clock. My number one, before I get to him, I have a couple of best of the rest. Mark Grant is on my best of the rest list. He's a former Padre, and you got to love Mudcat. Dave Roberts, best of the rest list. But number one, he's the one I know the best, other than your dad knowing him for the longest and yourself, but Randy. Randy Jones. Just kind of self-explanatory for me. He's my top former Padre.
Best of the rest for me, Derek Bell, one of my favorite Padres.
Derek Bell.
Gary Sheffield, one of my favorite Padres. Roberto Alomar, one of my favorite Padres. But number one on the list, no surprise here, Uncle Trevor.
Trevor.
He sits number one. He's basically family to me. Like, I mean, this dude, he was one of the only players that I could get in trouble with, like, at the field other than my dad. Like, he could discipline you? He had the authority to. So that's why he's number one on my list, amongst a whole bunch of other reasons. But that's my guy. He's number one.
Trevor Hoffman. Well, we always going to owe him for that trip to Cooperstown, right, Scrape?
Yeah.
Indeed. Well, you guys owe him.
That's the only reason I'm going.
You were going anyway.
I was going regardless.
Yes, well, we owe him because we were not going. Thanks to Trevor. All right, that's our list of the top five Padres.
Good list.
Kind of fun.
I like that.
Kind of fun. All right, I thought we had a little more time. I forgot we're doing a little interview here. Is it set to go?
It is set.
It is set to go.
I've known this guy a long time.
You want to bring him on?
No, you guys can do
it. I think you should bring him on.
Why don't you bring him on? You've known him for a long time. She's a friend of Scraby.
Yes. We were in the same wedding party together one time.
Yeah.
Sam Esfandiari. Did I get it right?
Yeah.
Hey, what's
up? Yes,
that's how well he knows you, Sam. He knows how to pronounce your last name.
I'm really bad at names.
Clearly.
Really bad at names. So,
all right.
Yes, I'm appreciative of you coming on today.
Thank you for introducing Sam, Mr. Scrubby. That was kind of you.
What?
I've heard people butcher it worse, Scrubby. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, there you go.
Thank you.
Sam is the host of Warriors World Radio, 95.7 The Game. And, of course, the Warriors are, you know, we haven't talked about them as much today because there was those two great Game 7s yesterday. But you forget that Friday night, the Warriors eliminated any chance for a Game 7. Sam, where do you put that performance in with all the rest of the great ones that the Warriors have had in the last 5 or 6 years? Because to go into Houston without KD and then Curry puts on that kind of performance, that's got to rank right up there for the Warriors.
Yeah, I mean, the fan base, we've been buzzing all weekend over that game. I think we were throwing polls on the radio if they liked that one more or the infamous Game 6 in Oklahoma City, kind of the one that the Thunder should have won and that ultimately sealed KD leaving the Thunder and coming to the Warriors. A lot of the fans here have been kind of wanting to see that old Warriors style and kind of getting to see it for one night and eliminate the Rockets, who are kind of their biggest rival at this point. It was pretty sweet.
Sam, I got to ask you, because Scraby and I talk about the Warriors because I'm a Laker fan often, and he mentioned to me that you have a theory in which KD stays with Golden State, and that disappoints me because I'm looking forward to him leaving out of the Western Conference, but apparently there's a chance he stays.
Yeah, I mean, I will say this. All the noise you've heard all year about him leaving, going to the Knicks, the reporters around the Warriors who cover the team day-to-day are not the type of people who would make that up. That's definitely sourced. So there is kind of a feeling that he could be, you know, everyone kind of expected him to go. But you never know, and it seems like with the way this playoff run's gone with his injury, there's been some thoughts that, you know, maybe he'll reconsider. I don't know. He's a very hard guy to predict with regards to his free agency.
Yeah, I think you guys are both right, because I think he could stay and he could go because he's
an emotional guy. So
he says a little bit what's on his mind at the time, and that can change. Sam, tell me about Steph Curry. Some things that, maybe, I don't know, that I'd be a little surprised to know. I mean, all I know him, unfortunately, is as a basketball player. In fact, I don't really see him interviewed all that often. I'm not saying that he's very good with the media, from what I understand, but what's Curry like, and how has he grown through this championship run of the last 5 years? as a person?
I mean, everything to do with the Warriors starts and ends with Steph Curry. Steve Kerr calls him a mini Tim Duncan, and that's kind of like his homage to how Duncan was kind of always the foundational piece for that Spurs culture. He always references the fact that, you know, Pop would always say, the only reason I'm able to coach is because the best player on the team allows me to coach him. And that's kind of where everything with the Warriors got built up. I mean, there was the moment in Game 6, which I think kind of sums Steph up. He gets that second ticky-tack foul, kind of had that problem the whole playoffs, getting into foul trouble. And Kerr subs him out, and he's arguing with Kerr, and Kerr basically says, if I can't trust you not to foul, how am I supposed to leave you on the court right now? A lot of players of his status probably would have gotten really upset about that, sulked. It would have turned into a big thing. Steph just kind of took it, went back in. I mean, we saw what he did in the fourth quarter.
Not bad.
That's such a terrific point, Sam, because you're right. That whole thing could have played out in a whole bunch of different scenarios, but because he just swallows his pride and goes sits down, he's able to affect that game in such a huge way at the end of that game. I want to ask you a little bit about this next series. They're going up against the Blazers. Now, obviously, in the regular season, they split their series, but do the Blazers pose any type of threat that maybe the Warriors haven't seen yet in a playoff series?
I don't know about that. I do think while it was great seeing them win without KD against Houston, the longer KD's out, and today the indication was, you know, he's not coming back in the next couple days. Steve Kerr basically mentioned he hasn't even gone through any on-court stuff, so he was kind of trying to let everyone know, you know, it's going to be at least a week or something like that. He was pretty vague. I do think the more games they have to play without him, the more you're going to start to notice they really only have four or five guys at this point. KD covers up so many holes for them. I mean, he can guard the best players, he can protect the rim. Everyone knows what he can do on offense. I mean, he is kind of their depth. They put him in like 80 different lineup combinations, and it all works. They look great against the Rockets on Friday, but, you know, the longer it goes with Portland, you start wondering, can Andre Iguodala, who's 35, continue to play 40 minutes a game? Can Klay and Draymond play 40-plus minutes a game? You start wondering about the wear and tear. That's the big thing for me.
Sam Esfandiari, the host of Warriors World Radio 95.7 The Game, joining us to talk about this Golden State club. All right, I want to know more personal questions. Again, Draymond Green. There's probably people that don't like Draymond Green. I think he's fantastic. I wish he was on my team. And I'm sure the Warriors are happy to have him. What's he like off the court? Is he quiet, or is he kind of always loud and gregarious? Or, you know what I mean? I always like to know these things.
I don't know that anyone would describe him as quiet.
Not quiet, okay.
more matured and poised than the guy that you saw maybe 3 years ago in the playoffs who got himself suspended in the finals. But the Draymond you see on the court is just kind of who he is. That's his personality. He lets you know when he's in the room.
Yeah.
To say the least, yeah.
All right. Well, I don't know. I mean, we don't get to know the Warriors that well. I like to know these things. I like Draymond. I like them all. I wish they were my favorite team so I could enjoy all these championships that they keep winning.
I just wish they were on my favorite team. Then it'd be even
or
easier.
That. Hey, Sam, thanks for the time, man. Enjoy the rest of the postseason.
Appreciate you, Sam.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
All right. Sam Esfandiari, host of Warriors World Radio. 95.7 The Game. Warriors got game. I don't know. I thought maybe he'd say Draymond Green is like this really quiet guy.
Yeah.
Never says anything.
I had a feeling he wasn't going
to
say that.
Yeah. Sam was brought to us by SDCCU on the fan hotline. SDCCU has low mortgage loan rates, equal housing opportunity. Apply now at SDCCU.com. Game one, Warriors Blazers is tomorrow night. Game one of Raptors Bucks is Wednesday night.
Scrape, give us his last name again.
Esfandiari.
Yeah, you have
Sam
no
Esfandiari.
You know, and if we're being completely honest, I've known him as Sam forever, but I believe his real name is Som, and so I'm not sure. Like,
oh,
I call
get out of here!
You know, I've called him Sam for
we just
a long
called
time.
Him the wrong name for 10 minutes.
No, I think he goes by both, but he's also in my fantasy football league, and he's really
you're not a good friend at all. By the
why?
Way, why you don't know his first or his last name? You've been just butchering his name for however long you guys have known
him. You know, when I'm not around, you probably call me Elo, huh?
Oh, I definitely do that.
All right. He is Thomas. He is odd. Put it together. It's odd, Thomas. And we don't really have an open for it, but the whole idea is that he keeps track of really, really odd baseball statistics and brings them to our attention once in a while. Hi, odd Thomas.
Hi, Chris.
Tony. How are you?
Hello, Thomas.
I just wanted to feed off that odd Thomas thing, because you said it came from a Dean Koontz book, right?
Yes, it was a title of a Dean Koontz book.
So
and
Dean
a movie,
Koontz
I believe.
Was actually good friends of Walt Disney, and there is a Halloween tree in Adventureland named after Dean Koontz.
There is?
Yeah.
At
Disneyland.
At Disneyland.
There's a what?
There's a tree that's dedicated to Dean Koontz in
a tree?
Adventureland.
A tree?
It's called the Halloween tree.
That's pretty impressive to have a tree.
Is that near, like, Haunted House or something?
No, it's... I don't know.
You don't know, where the tree...
don't know the location
of
Dean Koontz's
tree is, you just know he has one.
Well, Tom Sr. in my family is a big Disney nut. He had to pass that along.
Have you ever like done autograph signing somewhere where people stand in line and wait to get your autograph? I've probably been to a few with your dad. Okay, I've only gone to one in my life where I've stood in line to get somebody's autograph and take a picture with them.
Was Mickey?
No, Dean Koontz.
Oh, Dean.
That's what a great writer I think he is. He's phenomenal. He's my all-time favorite fiction writer. All right, let's get to Odd Thomas's stuff, though. What do you have, Odd Thomas?
So, some of these date back about a week or so ago, because I had them all ready to go, but we had such a great show last Thursday. But I'm not going to toss them out because they're still pretty cool.
Absolutely not.
So, as of May 7th, Hunter Pence had a historic game in Pittsburgh against the Pirates. He was the oldest player in Rangers history to have 3 extra base hits and 4 RBIs in a game. So
that is odd, because they've had some old guys on their team.
Didn't they have Big Sexy?
Big Sexy.
Bartolo.
Oh, they
did him for a while.
Well, I don't believe he had a lot of RBIs.
I know,
in the game,
but still, he was
Big
old.
Sexy was there for sure.
And we'll stick on the Rangers. This one popped up, and it was kind of a big one, that Joey Gallo was the first player in MLB history to reach 100 career home runs before 100 career singles.
Yes, 90.
No, I saw that.
Was it like 94?
Yeah, 93.
Singles?
93. Yeah.
It wasn't even close. Like, he's way ahead in the home run race.
Shout out to that Texas Ranger coaching staff, especially on the hitting. They got a guy by the name of Calais Crabb. He was a Padre for a short period of time. He was also one of my teammates. He gets the job as the assistant hitting coach, and he is. They have done, both of them, I can't remember who the head guy is, but they've both done a terrific job, especially with Gallo. Gallo's hitting like almost 300 right now, which is, you wouldn't have been able to sell me on that at any point.
Ever.
All right, this guy, Pablo Sandoval. This was May 6th.
Oh, that guy.
Pablo Sandoval, second player in modern-day MLB history since the 1900 with a home run, a stolen base, a scoreless pitching outing in the same game. The other was also a Giant and also versus the Reds, Christy Mathewson, on May 23rd, 1905, threw 9 innings of shutout ball plus a home run and had a stolen base.
That's a pretty good combination. You know who's going to be the next person to do that? I predict.
Shohei Ohtani.
No.
Oh.
Well...
That's
actually,
guess,
he'd
though.
Be a fair guess. Yes. But normally when he pitches, he doesn't bat, does he? Don't they DH for him when he pitches?
No, he normally DHs
he bats,
yeah,
okay.
You're right.
But
no,
here's a guy.
You're right. You had it right. He normally doesn't hit when he pitches.
All right, so here's a guy that I think can do this, is the guy for the Reds now, Michael Lorenzen. He's already got a couple of stolen bases this year. He had 6 home runs last year. And he's a pitcher, so he's got a chance.
Too, so
and he comes in the game as a center fielder once in a while. This guy's a very interesting guy to watch. If you're looking for kind of an odd player, Michael Lorenzen would fit the bill.
All right, this one goes back a little farther. This was May 4th. The Brewers had just played an 18-inning game and won. Ryan Braun was the first player not to score a run despite recording 6 hits in a game since Garrett Anderson did it September 27th, 1996.
Braun had 6 hits that night, and they didn't bring him around one time. That's pretty interesting. I don't get too many 6-hit games.
This one's
did your dad ever
older?
Get a 6-hit game? I know he had a ton of 5-hit games.
Let's find out.
Look it up.
He
must have had one.
Because we had him on the show, that it was DeVarius Gordon.
DeVarius, I like it.
DeVarius Gordon.
The only player currently on the active roster with 300 career stolen bases.
The only what?
Player on an active roster in baseball that has over 300 stolen bases.
Yeah. I wonder who's next.
Probably Billy Hamilton.
Somebody with like 10. Nobody steals bases anymore. Nobody wants to take the chance.
So, May 10th, Felix Hernandez had struck out Mike Trout 27 times, which is nearly twice as much as any other pitcher in baseball in Mike Trout's career.
That is impressive. Because Mike Trout is... I wonder how many times Mike Trout's just struck out in general.
All right, and then here's... We love Joey Votto. He had that one where he popped out after a certain amount of bases for the
first
time.
Popped out to first base for the first time in his career.
Yeah. So, the other night, he had his fourth strikeout game of his career. Out of 1,613 career games, he had his fourth four-strikeout game.
That's it?
Yep.
That's pretty impressive for a power hitter.
It was his first since 2009.
Joey Votto. Although Joey Votto's not a superstar anymore, he's still a pretty good player, and as that good of a power hitter to have that few four-strikeout games.
Are those all the six hits right there?
I looked up six hits in a game.
He did go. My dad did have a one-hit, six-hit game.
He did have
at least
six
one.
Game.
6-for-7 against the Giants.
6-for-7?
In 12 innings.
Well, then let's take it away from him, Scravy, because it was 12 innings.
That's not
you
what
would
I'm
have
saying.
To throw poor cold water on the whole deal.
I mean, 7 at-bats in a 9-inning game is a lot.
If this list is true, and you never know what Scravy's looking it up.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
He's the only one with 3,000 hits on this particular hit. List.
Oh, the only guy with 3,000 hits who also had a six-hit game?
Yeah. Good call.
Dad, there's a good one.
The lowest guy on the list, he had 128, but there was a guy named Cesar Gutierrez. And
he had 7 hits in a game.
He did.
Yes, he did.
And he only had 828 career hits. How crazy is that?
He had 7 in one game.
All right.
Not too shabby.
May 10th, Carlos
Carrasco. Stop interrupting Odd Thomas. Are you kidding?
Odd Thomas said, hold up, dog.
He just keeps going
over
with
my segment.
I love Odd Thomas. He just keeps going on with these, like, we're not even here.
2 weeks of built-up ones. I'm trying to get them out.
Yeah, all right.
Because after a while, they're going to age, and it's like, oh, crap, now I got to do more research. So, May 10th, Carlos Carrasco became the 11th pitcher with a shutout with 63 pitches or less in a game since John Maine in 2007.
63? Carlos Carrasco did that this year?
Yeah.
Because Kyle Hendricks did a 68 one. Not 81.
Yeah, he just
which I thought was impressive.
Put that to shame.
Carlos Carrasco had a 63-pitch shutout this year?
Mm-hmm.
How come we didn't hear more about that?
Because he's in Cleveland.
Because I think Randy Jones, like, his greatest ever was a 68-pitch shutout, and Randy was famous for that stuff.
All right, and then this is my last one.
Hang on a second. I got to check the 63. Hold on. Timeout.
While he's doing that, do you guys want to know who has the most hits in a game in history?
Yeah, Rennie Stennett, 7. 7-for-7.
I don't know.
Well, nobody's ever had
a 9-inning game, yeah, you're probably right.
But I am right.
An extra-inning game is Johnny Burnett. He had 9 hits. Do you guys remember this? Brandon Crawford went 7-for-8 2 years ago against the Marlins.
Nope.
Do not interrupt my friend.
Well, you're looking up something over there.
Yeah, I am, because Carrasco had 4 innings. I don't see this game. I don't see him having a complete game this season. Carrasco. Carlos Carrasco?
Yep.
63 pitches, 5 innings, 2 hits. Oh, you know why?
The game was rained out.
The game was rained out.
Oh.
There you go. All right.
Odd Thomas leave that out?
Yes, he did.
I actually did hear about this game.
Okay, Odd Thomas, you snuck one in on us there. He did get a complete game.
By the way.
Because the game rained out after 5 innings, and he threw 63 pitches.
Chris was not going to let that ride.
I know. No, I wasn't going to let that one ride until I figured it out.
No way.
No, because I know Randy had 68, and that was like the all-time unbelievable. So I would have heard that 63 one.
And then, we were speaking of the ice horse earlier, Michael Chavis. He was the most RBIs in a player's first 20 MLB games. He ranks number 3rd behind Ted Williams, George Scott, with 19.
Is that in the Red Sox lore and baseball history?
I said Red Sox history.
Oh, Red Sox history. Okay.
Who cares about Red Sox history? Yeah,
nobody. What was George Scott's nickname? Since you know all the nicknames of all the Red Sox, you should know this one.
I don't think Twitter was evolved then.
The Rumble Pony?
George Cartwheel Scott?
No.
George Michael Scott?
George Boomer. Scott.
Man, their nicknames were bad back in the
day. You didn't
like
their nicknames back in the days? They had some good nicknames back in the day.
Well,
what's
Mitch,
good now?
Is Mitch,
Mitchie Forbath? Is that good?
Is that any better?
Benny Biceps?
It's better than Boomer.
Boomer's a good nickname.
What about David Wells? They called him Boomer.
Yeah, David Wells was
He was the original Boomer.
David Wells may come down here and beat your behind for saying that Boomer's not a good nickname.
Mr. Wells, Boomer's a great nickname.
That's right. You better
Smart
say
man.
So.
Smart man.
All right. Very good, Odd Thomas. Good try on the 63 complete hit or pitch complete game, though, because you knew I had to chase that down. I got to stick up for my guy RJ on that one. All right, coming up, 6:30.
You would have chased it down regardless if RJ was involved, let's be honest.
Fair enough.
Okay.
Coming up, you don't get to hear it in the 6:30 segment very often, but the way the show broke today, you'll get it today. Our Big Five is coming up next with Scraby and Gwen and Chris and Odd Thomas, and we got to come up with a nickname for Will, too, on 97.3 The Fan.
Sometimes there's just not enough time in the day to talk all the sports we want.
I feel reborn. I'm like a phoenix.
Settle in and saddle up. The Big Five starts now on 97.3 The Fan.
I saw this story over the weekend, and I usually don't bother you guys on the weekend, but I had to send this story over because, let's get to it, Thomas.
Number five.
The Dolphins done it again. Chris's favorite team, the Miami Dolphins, signed running back Mark Walton after his successful tryout at the rookie minicamp this weekend. Walton's a 2018 fourth-round pick out of the University of Miami, but here is the big deal. He was arrested three times already in 2019 before being waived by the Cincinnati Bengals this offseason. And Dolphins brand new head coach Brian Flores said that, quote, people deserve a second chance, end quote, in reference to Walton's tryout. He went on to say, I don't want to judge people based on one incident or two incidents. I think it's a case-by-case
or
situation.
Or three, or four, yeah. Or five, or seven.
I think it's a case-by-case situation for a player and just for people in general. That's kind of my stance. Now, Walton, the running back, is facing a felony charge of carrying a concealed weapon along with three misdemeanor charges, resisting an officer without violence, marijuana possession.
This is all in 2019 because we're only in May.
We're in 5 months in.
Oh, my goodness.
This is all in 2019. So, marijuana possession and reckless driving from a March 12th incident.
And you know you got to be a bad dude to get released by the Bengals.
That was only one incident, Chris. All that stuff.
Oh, that
was
just one?
The second incident happened in February 16th, when he has a battery charge and misdemeanor possession of marijuana again, and then the last one. Sorry, so it was battery charge for the second one and a misdemeanor possession of marijuana separately for a third one. So, Chris, your favorite team. Do you think he deserves to be given a chance after these arrests?
You said he was successful at the rookie tryout camp, right?
Yes, yes, that's what it said. Yes, that's what I read.
Absolutely not. I don't care what team he's with. I'm, you know, my stance on second and 14th opportunities. Second is okay. 14th is not okay. The Dolphins are just a bad organization, and they're not changing. If they're going to continue to bring guys like this in, I don't know what they expect.
Does it worry you at all that your coach, your brand new head coach, thinks that this guy deserves a second chance,
third chance? The way what worries me is that he just said he deserves a second chance, not really referring to the fact that the guy's already been arrested three times
this year. How many times have you been arrested, Chris, this year?
How dumb is my coach?
Ooh.
To not notice that. I'm not pleased with this story now, but I'm kind of sour on the whole Dolphin thing right now, and I just have to live with it.
Tony, what do you think? Do you think that Walton deserves to be given a chance after all these arrests?
Yeah, I do.
Wow.
I think he deserves another chance. I don't know that. I mean, he's all happened. January 16th, February 16th, March 12th.
It's only once a month. Wait a second. Nothing in April.
Nothing in April.
So he's starting to pick it up.
He showed some improvement.
You
don't think the third arrest would be a big writing on the wall?
God.
Listen,
that's so funny that April he was clear.
Well, he's been clear May, too.
So far. He hasn't made it yet.
Listen, I think, does he deserve a chance right now? Probably not. He probably needs to get his life together, his everything in order here. Yeah. It seems like it's a little chaotic. Three straight arrests once a month for 3 months is a little bit extensive.
But the highlight to me is that my coach says, I believe in getting guys second chances. Well, I do too, but this isn't second.
I'll chalk that up to him misspeaking on that one.
All right.
misspeaking? I mean, that was the quote.
Do we need to run your rain thing back again?
No, but if you were to say, did you say that it was raining, I would have to say yes, because that's my quote.
We don't know what the question was that he was asked.
Asked about signing a guy who's been arrested three times this year.
We don't know what he was asked. The point is, I'll chalk that part up, because clearly this is not his second chance. This would be a third or fourth. I'll chalk it up to him just misspeaking on that. Okay. But ultimately, before he steps on the field, they got to get him, make sure he's all straightened up. I mean, there are like lists where you could be put on, where you're on the roster, but you're not actually able to play.
Commissioner exempt.
He probably is on his way on to there anyway with three arrests.
I feel bad for the guy. I hope he gets it together.
I do too.
Scraby, you would have been, just real quick before you get to number four, I think a better question would have been, in the year 2019, what will happen more often? This guy gets arrested or the Dolphins win?
Ooh. So you're saying the Dolphins don't get more than three wins?
No, I think the guy could get arrested three or four more times and give the Dolphins a little more room. But
for this guy's sake, I really hope not.
I do too. All right.
I mean, there's only so many times you could sit in the back of a police car as a professional football player and think, this is not a good path for me.
There's only so many times you can sit in there as a regular person.
Eventually, they just throw away the keys, don't they?
I actually think it's probably easier to be arrested as a regular person.
It probably is.
All right.
Number four.
Dallas Mavericks, you guys hear about this? Dallas Mavericks power forward Kristaps Porzingis was involved in a bloody altercation over the weekend at a club in his hometown in Latvia. Quote, it is our understanding that Kristaps was jumped and assaulted outside of a club in Latvia. We will provide an update when one is available, end quote. That's what the Dallas Mavericks said in a statement. TMZ reported that the men who attacked Porzingis were upset that he left the New York Knicks, even though he was traded to the Mavericks, so it wasn't really his choice. But this is troubling for the team.
They bloodied him because he got traded to the Dallas Mavericks?
They're really mad.
They're in Latvia?
Yes, his
hometown.
And
they're really mad.
His hometown, which I heard Stephen A. talking about this earlier, and he made a good point. Like, why are these people so mad at him in his hometown? Isn't that where he goes to be praised and revered and loved and
clearly
all that
not.
Stuff? I guess not, because they are big Knicks fans. And after he got traded to Dallas, they're out. But this is troubling for the Mavericks, because before he was traded to them, he was accused of rape about a month ago, and now this. So, Tony, is he putting himself in bad spots, or is this just the circumstance of being an international star?
First, I want to know, who's throwing punches at a 7'3" guy?
Yeah, was one guy standing on another guy's shoulders?
How are you getting the leverage to bloody him? Because I saw the pictures of
him. He's bloody.
He's bloody, like, at his forehead. So you had to get up there.
Somebody had to jump down from a ledge.
I'm willing to bet that's exactly how they got to him. They jumped down and snuffed him out.
They had some guy who was sitting on someone else's shoulders with a big jacket around him walking around the club.
If you're the Mavericks, though, considering the turmoil that their organization had, what was it, last year?
Oh, yeah, with the...
Last summer?
The executive that was caught with the scandal.
A whole bunch of different things
going on. Sexual harassment.
And then you trade for a guy who is later... Now, allegedly...
Yes.
This woman has said that he raped her.
Yes.
Probably not the light that you want to be in if you're the Mavericks. But in Porzingis' defense, I mean, the guy should be able to go out, have a good time, and not get snuffed because he got traded from the Knicks to the Mavericks.
Can you imagine that?
He didn't trade himself, by the way.
I would just like to point this out to Kevin Durant, who is rumored to be perhaps going to the Knicks.
Oh, yeah.
If you don't go to the Knicks, do not go to Latvia.
Right.
Or else don't go to
Latvia.
You.
Don't go to Latvia, and once you get there, you can't leave.
Can't leave. Once you get there, you cannot leave. Hotel California.
Oh.
Number three.
Wait, did Chris give his? I went first.
Oh, I'm sorry, Chris. Sorry about that.
Oh, that was mine.
Yeah,
I'm just giving advice to Kevin Durant.
Okay,
the rest of what Tony said was
accurate. How concerned are you if you're the Mavericks with
Kristaps Porzingis.
Well, I'm concerned about the rape charge, certainly, but I'm not concerned about
getting
attacked.
That's... Are you concerned that the international audience is not a fan of your team?
No.
Okay.
That's like
have
three people attacked a guy. That doesn't mean the everyone internationally hates the Mavericks.
You know Scrabies. What'd you call him? Scrubby.
Hey, stop.
You know Scrubby is looking for the TMZ angle.
Let's go to number three and get out of this.
San Francisco Giants pitcher we talked about a little bit earlier, Madison Bumgarner, and Reds outfielder Yasiel Puig have a long history of not liking each other after facing each other for 6 years while Puig was with the Dodgers. Well, it's all the same even when Puig is playing with the Reds. He smashed a 388-foot home run off Madison Bumgarner, but it didn't seem to really bother him at all because after the game, he was asked about the home run and said, quote, "He's a quick study. It only took him 7 years to learn how to hit that pitch," end quote. So, Chris, why don't you think we see this type of trash talking in baseball anymore?
Why don't we? I think we're starting to see it more and more.
Is it bubbling back to the surface?
No, it's beyond, it's over the surface. It's okay. I thought it's just a, honestly, I don't really even look at this as trash talk. I look at this as Madison Bumgarner getting an opportunity to throw kind of a comical line in there.
Oh, okay.
I don't necessarily think he's trash talking. He got whipped on this pitch and Puig hit it a long way, and I just think he just was trying to say something funny. That's how I took it anyway.
Tony?
I took it, this is Madison Bumgarner being salty Madison Bumgarner that he always is. I mean, it don't matter if it's Yasiel, if it's whoever, if you pop up and you yell at yourself, Madison Bumgarner's mad. If you hit a hard ground ball and you're upset that somebody caught it, Madison Bumgarner's upset. And God forbid you hit a home run off of him. He's looking at you the entire way. You haven't noticed this? Have you? How many fake fights have you seen with the Giants as a Giants fan?
It doesn't matter.
Since Madison Bumgarner's been there.
Madison Bumgarner is top three Giants of all time.
Maybe so. He's also a terrible, terrible, sore loser, too.
Really?
Oh, my God.
I honestly didn't know this about him.
Dude, this is one of his things that he does. He's like, he gets mad at everybody who, you're not allowed to yell, you're not allowed to do anything when Madison Bumgarner's on the mound.
And Tony Gwynn Jr. had a very good batting average off Madison Bumgarner.
Oh, it was only like 7 at-bats, so it's not that big a deal.
And he got mad.
Did he get mad at you?
No, I didn't do anything. I just hit a base hit and ran to the first base. I couldn't really pimp a base hit.
I do not believe that Madison Bumgarner qualifies as a top three Giant of all time either.
Yeah, by the way, it's not even close.
Not
even close.
I was just going
to let that slide, but you know Chris is not letting
that slide.
Wait, let's talk about that for a second.
All right,
because
we
Madison
will.
Bumgarner
you ready?
Three World Series championships. Number one has got to be Barry Bonds.
Willie Mays.
How about Willie Mays?
Is number one.
Thank you. Bonds second.
Madison Bumgarner.
No, Christy Mathewson, Mel Ott, Carl Hubble,
Matt Williams,
the Hubble
Juan
telescope.
Marshall, Willie McCovey.
Oh my gosh, it's done. Juan Marshall, Willie McCovey. He's not even. He might not even be top seven.
Yeah.
In Giant.
All right, that was stupid of me.
It was very
stupid of me. I can't stall any longer. I'm trying to find Tony's record on Madison Bumgarner, but it's not gonna work.
You don't need to stall. It's not important.
Number two.
One of the best MMA fighters in history lost on Saturday night, Anderson the Spider Silva.
He lost again?
He did. Lost to Jared Cannonier in his first round. Knockout. It was actually an injury that stopped the fight, and it was unclear what exactly was wrong with Silva, who was limping as he left the octagon. But the former champion did say that he had issues with his knee going on into the match. And fans are saying that Silva may have tarnished his career with how he's fought in the last couple fights. So, Tony, do you think a legendary athlete who loses more than wins on the way out of their career tarnishes their accomplishments?
They can. It depends on how far they've, you know, raised their status prior to that. Like Michael Jordan came back, wasn't even close to the same player, and nobody thinks about the Wizard time very much. We only think about Michael in his Bulls time. So it really depends. And to be honest, I don't know that this sport that we're talking about, unless you go out early enough, I think it can tarnish it in this particular, because what's the word I'm looking for? You know, it's a aggressive sport. I mean, it's mano y mano. So there's always losers in these fights. But Spider was Anderson Silva was like one of the best when he was at his prime.
Oh yeah.
And I think because he's fought so much longer after that and the injuries on top of it, I think it has hurt his legacy.
Chris, what do you think?
I think Tony's right and he's not, because Muhammad Ali was awful down the stretch of his fighting career. I mean, to the point of, you know, people were feeling sorry for him in the ring and like easing up on him almost. And Muhammad Ali is regarded as the greatest fighter of all time. Jordan was an excellent example. I think it definitely tarnishes your reputation as it's happening, but usually time has a way of healing that. And probably most MMA fans will look back on Anderson Silva's career fondly and will forget most of these losses.
The two guys we just named were considered the greatest ever in their sports.
You're right. But
to your point,
but Silva's one of the greatest in his sport.
I was just going to say, to your point, Anderson Silva was also considered one of the greatest ever. So you may be right.
Yeah.
I think that might be the...
That might get you by a little extra.
It gives you a little equity.
A little equity if you're the best ever.
I finally found it. Tony's stats against Madison Bumgarner. He went 3-for-7 with 2 doubles, 2 RBIs, and hit .429 off him. You had 8 plate appearances, but you didn't walk. So what the heck happened?
Probably got hit by a pitch.
It doesn't say that stat, but okay. That's pretty good, though.
Yeah.
I had to look
that up.
I know, but I'm not gonna. You can't sell yourself short. That's pretty good. And you faced him
lefty on lefty.
And you faced him in his prime when he was winning all those World Series and everything. So
did he glare at you when you got to second base?
Nah.
Number one.
All right, Chris talked about it a little bit earlier, but for all those people out there that wanted to see the Robert Kraft video, it may never be released. News out of Florida is that the state prosecutors cannot secretly recorded video allegedly showing New England Patriots owner Robert Kraft engaging in what they call massage parlor acts. I didn't know that was a thing. A judge ruled today, striking a serious blow to the case, charging him with soliciting prostitutes. In his 10-page ruling, Judge Leonard Hanser,
my hero,
your hero, wrote that Jupiter police detectives and the judge who issued the search warrant allowing the secret installation of cameras at the Orchids of Asia Day Spa in Jupiter did not do enough to minimize the invasion of privacy of other customers. I didn't realize this, but people that were there legitimately getting massages and nothing else were also on video, and so they're saying that's an invasion of their privacy. So Kraft's attorneys are expected to file a motion to dismiss his case based on lack of evidence as soon as tomorrow. Prosecutors have the options of appealing the decision, dismissing the charges, or going ahead to trial without the only evidence they've presented. Chris?
I wish we could go back and play the sound for when this broke, because Chris called this perfectly.
He did. Chris, do you think Kraft's fight to keep this video from coming out is making him look worse?
No.
Nope.
I'm happy it's not coming out, because I just don't want to ever see it, because I won't be able to unsee it. Mm. Thank you. None of this is going to ever change my opinion of whether Robert Kraft engaged in this, because I'm pretty positive he did. Third, I'm not shocked that they're going to file a motion to dismiss the case, and it very well may end up being the way it turns out. But in the court of public opinion, Robert Kraft will always be looked upon a little less... With a little less respect than he had before this case. So, to me, I don't necessarily care a whole lot one way or the other. The issue is the trafficking, the sex trafficking of young lady. That's much more serious than anything that Kraft is involved in.
Agreed.
And I just believe that his reputation will always take a smutty hit because of this, regardless of how it turns out in the courts.
Robert Kraft forever will be, whenever you mention him, is going to be like, remember that time he was at the massage parlor? Tony, what do you think? Do you think he's fighting, his fight to keep this video from coming out is making him look worse?
No, not at all. I basically think people have already kind of put it in the back burner.
He keeps bringing it back up by doing all these things.
But guess what? There ain't going to be no video now, so it's going to really go away. He was bringing it up as much as he was bringing it up to get the video away. Now the video's never coming out. And now there's, you know, you see how when our society has video, it changes everything.
It does.
And that will never come out. So
I just think of this.
And in our society, if you have as much money as Robert Kraft has, you can keep anything from happening.
Exactly. I was going to say this is a bigger problem with our court system, I think, that you can pay your way to getting free.
I don't know if he paid his way.
He's paying his attorneys a lot.
He is paying his attorneys a lot, but his attorneys were smart enough to find that issue that you can't videotape people who aren't doing things wrong. Yeah. Like, that was the mistake that the department made. They exploited it. Only the best paid lawyers can exploit it and will exploit it. That's basically what you mean by money can get you out of anything.
Yeah, exactly.
That's all for the Big Five from Gwynn and Chris on 97.3 The Fan.
Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with three friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor.
Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app. Thanks to Republic Records.
This is a national contest.